Who remembers what last Torah portion was about?
It was about the 7 years and then also the 50 years. Is that the one you guys read?
Were you not here?
No, I wasn't here, but I read it. And then
now you either.
What happens with the trade of the land after that 50th year?
Yeah.
Was that what you guys read?
Yeah, well, we talked about the 7th year Sabbath for the land. And we talked about the counting seven years, which is 49 years, plus one for the 50th year, which would be the Yovel,
right?
Which means the... Well, it's not necessarily Jubilee. The English, the real translation is... the blast, the horn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Yovel means the sound, like the woo.
One of the 50th, he's coming.
Yeah, the shout, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that to say is that wasn't just by itself, because everything before that, you had the menorah, you had the Seventh Day Sabbath, and then you had all those paragraphs of sevens. You guys remember that? You had the commandments grouped in sevens. You doing all right, Viola?
Yeah, what's wrong with this chair?
Oh. So we had all of those sevens. We had about the last seven chapters just filled with sevens, talking about seven. Like the author was just so infatuated with the number seven that he grouped things in seven, gave us seven commandments, right? Gave us the Shabbat, talked about the seven feast days, talked about the seven branch candlestick that we call the menorah. Then he started talking about seven times seven for the years. And now, I wonder if we're going to continue to hear about sevens today. Or anything to do with the garden, right? The Garden of Eden. All right, so today's Torah portion is, who got the Hebrew down? Who wants to try it out, sound it out?
Be'chukatai.
And the English translation?
In my...
because
I read it.
Yeah, what does your Hebrew say for statutes? There you go. Buchotai.
What does it say for you, John?
Kotai?
Mine does not give me the English.
Sure you do. Verse 3?
Yeah.
If you will walk in my... If you will walk...
In my Shabbatot and venerate my sanctuary. Oh, verse 3, sorry. Observe my commandments.
If you will walk in my what?
Laws.
Yours says laws.
If you follow my laws and faithfully observe my commandments.
Yeah. So the Hebrew word there is kotai. Bachukotai.
Im bachukotai.
There you go. All right, you guys ready? Here we go. So if you will walk in my statutes, keep my commandments, do them, I will give you rain in due season, and the land will yield its increase, and the trees of the field will yield their fruit. Your threshing will reach to the vintage will reach to the sowing time, and you will eat your bread to the full and live safely in your land. I shall give peace in the land, and you will lie down, and no one will make you afraid. I shall get rid of terrible beasts from the land. Neither will the sword go through your land. And you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. Five of you will chase 100. 100 of you will put 10,000 to flight. And your enemies will fall before you by the sword. For I will have respect for you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you. I will establish my covenant with you, and you will eat old store and bring out the old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my very being will not abhor you. I will walk among you, and I will be your Elohim, and you will be my people. I am Yahweh your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, so you would not be their bondmen. And I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you go upright. We'll stop right there. And any comments, questions, observations?
I read this every morning, the morning prayers, but I never seen it with the enemy, and he will take care of the enemy and all of that. That was awesome, so I love that.
Yeah.
The sword and...
You know, and
I love it.
And the interesting thing about this paragraph here is he's talking to the nation. Right? He's talking to them as a nation. He's not talking to them as an individuals. He's talking to them collectively. If you guys as a nation do this, I will do this for you. This is not telling you that if you live in Israel and John's 100% perfect and righteous, but the rest of us are evil, that Israel's still going to be righteous because of John. No, John's going to suffer now. Even though John's perfect, he's going to suffer because his brothers are not doing it. So God is talking collectively to everybody here. Right? So I just want to point that out. That if something's befalling you and you're doing everything perfect, you probably got Jonah on your boat. Right? So you got a Jonah on your boat. Or you have an Achan in your... You have it multiple times in your Bible where everyone's doing great. You got Joshua. You're in the promised land.
Yep.
You're taking it. And all of a sudden, people...
Something's
everything wrong. God said wouldn't happen to you is happening to you. And Joshua's like, Lord, what are you doing? Like, we're perfect. This isn't supposed to happen. And he's like, Joshua, my word is my word. And if something's happening, what does my word say? Just like, cast lots. Who is it? And they rolled the lots. And it's like, oh, someone from the tribe of, what was it, Judah? Where's Achan from? First it landed on, oh, it's from this Judah. Well, let's find out who in Judah. Who in Judah? And they rolled, cast the lots. Oh, from the family of whatever. Aha. All right. For who in this family? He's like, it landed on Achan.
Yes, of course.
And he goes into Achan. And it was Achan.
And
it was all
confessed.
All because of him.
Once he was pointed out, then he confessed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. After he was pointed out, he's like, hey, it was me.
I mean, we had to go that far.
Yeah, it's after the spotlight was like, boom. John's like, yeah. Same thing with Jonah, right? There's guys on the boat. We're like, hey, you're all pretty. You're God. What's going on? Jonah. So what I'm saying is God's talking collectively to Israel. Right? If Israel as a nation is taking care of the land, they're listening to Yahweh's commandments, then Yahweh's going to bring the full blessing. There won't be no wild beasts out there to eat them up or their crops.
Enemies.
The rain's going to be their enemies. They're going to defeat all their enemies. He ain't gonna do it just for one person or just for half of them. He wants all of them. So that means this is doable. Right? So I just wanted to throw that out there that though you may be living perfect or something and something's befalling you, it's probably because you got something in your camp or someone in your camp that's ruining it for you. Right? Unless you have an Abraham saying, oh God, if there's like five righteous people, could you do it? Right. So anyway, I just want to really throw that disclaimer out there that this is collectively for Israel. Okay. If you're living in a perfect life and you're not getting all the rain and everything like that, like don't feel like it's your fault. Because this is a collective statement for living in the nation of Israel when they're together. Okay. I'm not telling you not to be perfect. I'm encouraging you to do that. But what I'm saying is don't be discouraged if all this stuff isn't happening to you. Okay. So, verse 14. But if you will not hearken to me and will not do all of these commandments, if you despise my statutes, or if your very being abhors my judgments, so you will not do all of my commandments, but you break my covenant, then I will do this to you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, the burning, the fever that will consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you will sow your seed in vain, for your enemies will eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you will be slain before your enemies. Those who hate you will reign over you, and you will flee when no one pursues you. All right, so time to reflect on this. So like the first paragraph we read was you read about Yahweh's favor, right?
Yes.
Yahweh's favor if what?
You keep his commandments.
Okay, so Miss Viola said, if you keep his Torah. Okay, now what did we just read?
If you don't.
Second paragraph.
You're going to be walking in fear because someone's going to chase you and you're not. No one's chasing you. You're in fear.
You ever meet people like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so the second paragraph is we have Yahweh's anger if you don't keep his Torah. And I always repeat this. This is why I believe.
This is very hard for me to see. But it's great.
Oh, yeah.
This is why I believe, like, when I read, like, the Psalms of Asaph, where he was, you know, singing a song to Yahweh, saying, Yahweh, I don't get it, because your word says that if we don't keep your word, then, you know, we're going to suffer all this hardship, we're going to be broke, we're going to have miscarriages, we're going to have all these things. I don't get it, Yahweh. Like, but I see that neighbor over there, and he's a drunkard, he has a bunch of horrible relationships, and him and his children, they're living good lives. They got all the money in the bank. They're partying. What's going on? And that's because of stuff like that. I really come to believe that those people didn't cut a covenant with Yahweh. Right?
Yeah.
So they're not suffering in this way. But what Asaph goes and he says is, aha, even though they're not suffering, you know, the curse is God's anger, God doesn't love them, because if he loved them, he would chastise them. He goes, you are my portion and you are my rock, and this I know is that when I go to your sanctuary, I have what they don't have. I have you and your love. You are my portion. So I will not lose heart and I will continue to tread on, even though your punishment seems bad in my eyes because I don't have the wealth and the party life the way they do. But I have you and your love. Who am I in heaven but you, O Lord? Is what he says. Are you going to say something, Miss Viola?
Well, the thing is, in the end, then when they stand before God, that's when it's going to be sad. You might have had it all now, fame and everything else, but it's going to be very sad.
Yeah, and that's what he was struggling with. But his conclusion is, you know, they didn't cut a covenant. I did. And if something's happening to me, whether I am suffering this pain because of my righteousness and people are persecuting me, it's because God loves me. Or if I'm suffering this because I did something wrong, it's because God loves me. Whenever he chastises me, just like a good father, it's because it's his love. It may not feel good, but it's his love. He loves me. And that's what he came to terms with in his song.
And all in all things give thanks,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Yeah. So anyway, this is for those who said yes, Lord, to his commandments. And so if you see people in the world not keeping his commandments and they're not, it's because they didn't join a covenant with him.
Yeah.
But you and I, he's trying to woo us back into the covenant when we're trying to walk away from it. Those things that are about to happen to us, that's what they are. Right? So let's keep reading because it gets pretty interesting here. In verse 18, it says, if you will not yet hearken to me for all of this, I will punish you seven times more for your sins. I will break your powerful pride. I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as bronze. And your strength will be spent in vain. For your land will not yield or increase, and neither will the trees of the land yield their fruits. Interesting words. You've heard a lot of these words before. Right?
Seven times. Whoa.
Oh, wait, would you say that again?
Seven times.
Say that again.
Seven times.
What have we been reading for like the last seven chapters?
Seven times.
Seven. Actually, more than seven chapters. Goodness.
Yeah.
So if we don't keep, right, now it's going to be seven times what? Worse?
Yes.
Okay. And everything up here from seven was good and like the garden, right? But everything down here,
it's bad.
It's getting worse. So if that's like the garden, this is going to be like the anti-garden. Mm-hmm. Anybody ever had a fruit tree that didn't give no fruit? How does that feel? How many years does it take to finally get fruit off of a tree?
Well, we're supposed to have it after five, right? Isn't that the five?
Okay, so let's say you, Viola, I gave you a seed and you planted a tree. You planted some trees out in your yard. How long would it take for you to start seeing that tree rise and grow out of your ground?
Probably 5 years, right?
It takes about, three years for it to start producing fruit. How much work does it take? So imagine you worked 3 years, John, on your pecan orchard. And the 500 pecan trees that you planted didn't give you any pecans. Does that feel like beautiful bliss?
No.
Exactly. Right? This is what's going on. Is you don't keep his commandments. Yeshua said it like this. Let me put it this way. Yeshua said it like this. You will know them by their fruits. A bad tree cannot bear
good fruit.
And a good tree cannot bear bad fruit. Right? So, we're either living your life and the choices we make, you're either making the garden here on earth or you're making the anti-garden here on earth with your choices. You and I get to choose life every day. Remember Joshua? For me and my house, we're going to what?
Sure.
We're going to choose life, right? Yahweh in Deuteronomy chapter 30 says, I lay before you blessings and cursings, good and bad, life and death. Hey, let me help you out. Choose life. Choose the tree of life, right? So, all of our decisions, you're either making Yahweh's garden or you're contributing to the anti-garden. Okay? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So seven times more. I wonder if we're going to hear a bunch of more sevens coming up. Viola says yes. She read ahead like John. He's already...
No,
look at
no.
Him.
I'm just thinking it probably is.
Oh, you're... Okay.
We're
yeah.
on a roll.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good job. Good catch. Verse 21. So if you walk contrary to me and will not hearken to me, I will bring seven times more plagues upon you according to your sins. And I shall also send wild beasts among you, which will rob you of your children, destroy your cattle, make you few in number, and your highways will be desolate. If you will not be redeemed by me by these things, but walk contrary to me, I will walk contrary to you. I will punish you yet seven times for your sins. I shall bring a sword upon you that will avenge the quarrel of my covenant. And when you are gathered together within your cities, I will send the pestilence among you, and you will be delivered into the hand of the enemy. And when I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women will bake your bread in one oven, and they will deliver you your bread again by weight, and you will eat and not be satisfied. Okay, so did we hear another seven in there? Yeah, what did he say about this seven? What's going to happen seven times more?
Strike you again seven times for your sins.
Yeah, what did it include anything else?
Oh yeah, there's a bunch.
What did it include?
The scary one. It's like, you know, they'll be baking for you, and you, and still you're not going to be satisfied. All these food.
So I guess apparently there's no righteous men anymore, because 10 women are going to have to bake them bread or something. I guess there's 10 women trying to bake one man bread, and even that's not enough.
And he's not going to be satisfied.
You know, it's funny, because being prepared is good, like financially, John will tell you, right? Having a nice cushion and all that stuff, it's good finances, right? Good financial, what's my word there? Preparation for your life?
Stewardship.
There you go, stewardship, right?
Yeah.
You want to be a good steward, right? You want to have money in the bank for your future generations. You want to have cushion for you and your family. You want to have all this stuff, right? You want to have residual income. You want to have, I mean, John, you're the finance expert, not me. I mean, you can...
You're doing good.
Am I doing good so far? Like, you want to have all these things going for you, right? You don't want to, you want to have money, making money for you. You want to have all these good things going for you. Those are good, good things. But the moment you start walking away from Yahweh, is one thing you can't do is think that those things is going to be your safety net.
Yeah, that's not your security.
Because now you get to a point where where the trust that you had, the people that had your trust. Why are you laughing? What if that trust burnt down, that building of all those people? You know, like, how? What do you think, like, Hurricane Katrina did to the businesses there? So one thing is, okay, I have insurance. Okay, that's great. But what about your business now? What's going to happen to your business in the 9 months it takes to rebuild your buildings and stuff? Right? Like, okay, you have insurance on your home. Cool. Tornado comes and takes it. Okay, that's okay. I got insurance. Oh, yeah, but what are you going to do for the next year while they're rebuilding you a house? Where are you going to stay now? Like,
you have nothing.
So what I'm saying is there are moments in your scriptures where Yahweh says people had were saving money, but they had holes in their money bags. They planted, they had seed. Oh, don't worry. Don't worry, we ran out of food. We got a lot of seed. And they planted their fields, and guess what happened? Either nothing grew, or the animals came and ate it, or the Philistines came and robbed it. You had Shammah out there in the field. He just got tired of Goliath and them stealing his lentils. Right? You guys ever read David's Mighty Men? And there's one of them named Shammah? He's the guy that... You know, is he the one that, yeah, he's the guy that fought so hard in the lentil field that his hand was stuck to his sword. Yeah, his hand just got, had a cramp in his hand, John, and it wouldn't let go of the sword. But he killed, 1,000 Philistines?
Yeah.
You know what it was? It was over lentils. He killed them over lentils. He was tired of the Philistines coming and robbing his lentil field, and all Israel was afraid to stop the thieves from stealing their food. So he said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to stand in the lentil field and I'm going to defend it. And 10,000 Philistines came to pick some lentils out of Israel's field. And he said, I'm eating lentils for dinner tonight.
My golly.
Yeah. Right? So, anyway, what I'm saying is, preparation is good, but it's not your safety. Your salvation is in Yahweh. It's in Yeshua. So just because you saved doesn't mean you're good, right? Because in the end, He is sovereign over all things. Cool?
Yes.
So anyway, that was another 7 times more.
Yep.
Goodness. I didn't like when my dad raised his voice at me. My sisters pushed his limits. I saw them. I can't even repeat some of the things that he did to them, you know. It was horrible. Like, I don't want that. Like, he raised his voice, I started crying. But my sisters, that didn't, his voice didn't scare them. They wanted to see how far he could go, and I did not want to test those waters.
Well, we heard the belt coming out of the belt loops. That was like devastating. He didn't say a word, but he did come out.
Well, I have one sister, not going to put any names on it, but... Goodness. Like, I'm over there, like, just throw in the towel. Like, I'm sitting from the sidelines. Like, you know, you ever seen a boxer? You ever see the boxer? Just like, you're like, you ain't gonna win this fight, dude. Just give up. Like,
strong will.
Oh, my goodness. I'm like on the sideline, just yelling at her, like, throw in the towel. Just give up. You ain't gonna win this. Like, just.
No.
You haven't won your entire life, and you ain't gonna win this one either. Just stop it. But they don't.
It's a spirit. It's like, I don't know what it is. I have a daughter that was like that. Oh my gosh.
John, you had any siblings that way? Were you just like...
One brother.
That was enough.
Were you like me? You were just out there like, here, let me throw it in for you. Stop it.
Yeah, me and my brother Abe, we were like you.
Just rooting your other ones on just to give up already?
Yeah.
That's how I was just sitting in the silence. I was like... Doesn't that hurt? Like, stop. Like, it hurts me watching. Like, stop. But no, they just kept pushing dad's limits.
Push the buttons, huh?
Yeah, they pushed everyone's buttons. It's like, goodness.
Oh, man, come on.
It's like, to this day, they still do that. So anyway, verse 27. Before I get myself in trouble. So if... Hopefully not. If you will not hearken to me for all of this, but walk contrary to me, and then I walk contrary to you also in fury, even I will chastise you 7 times for your sins. You will eat the flesh of your sons. You will eat the flesh of your daughters. I will destroy your high places, and I will cut down your images and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of your idols. My very being will abhor you. And I shall make your cities waste and bring your sanctuaries to desolation. And I shall not smell the savor of your sweet odors. And I shall bring the land into desolation, and your enemies who live there will be astonished at it. And I will scatter you among the nations. I will draw out a sword after you, and your land will be desolate, and your cities will be waste. So then the land will enjoy her Sabbaths, as long as it lies desolate and you are in your enemy's land. Even then the land will rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it will rest because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you lived in it. And upon those of you who are left, I will send a faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies. And the sound of a shaken leaf will chase them, and they will flee. As fleeing from a sword, they will fall down when no one pursues. They will fall one upon another, as it were before a sword when no one pursues. And you will have no power to stand before your enemies. And you will perish among the nations, and the land of your enemies will eat you up. And those of you that are left will pine away in their iniquity in your enemies' lands. And also in the iniquities of their fathers will they pine away with them. If they will confess their iniquity and the iniquities of their fathers with their treachery, which they acted treacherously against me, that also they have walked contrary to me, and that I also have walked contrary to them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts are humbled, and they then accept the punishment of their iniquity, I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and my covenant with Isaac, and I will remember my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember the land. The land also will be left of them, and will enjoy its Sabbaths while it lies desolate without them. And they will accept the punishment of their iniquities because they despised my judgments, because their soul abhorred my statutes. And yet for all of that, when they are in the land of their enemies, I shall not cast them away, neither will I abhor them, to to destroy them utterly and to break my covenant with them. I am Yahweh, their Elohim. But I shall, for their sake, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought out from the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations. So I would be their Elohim. I am Yahweh. And these are the statutes and the judgments and the teachings which Yahweh made between himself and the children of Israel on Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. So, he told you, he'll do you seven times more. Mm-hmm. Again.
If you're defiant, he'll be defiant.
What's seven times seven?
49.
Times seven?
No,
give me the score.
John,
good
math.
What is
it?
341? Times seven? Oh. One more time, John. You got it in you. He's like, it's Shabbat. I did this all week. I already graduated. Leave me alone. Yeah. I don't have to do another math equation in my life.
Good grade point average. Leave me alone.
That's my brain. As I graduate, I don't got to do that stuff no more. I'm going to delegate now to my employees.
Yeah.
So you go one more seven, one more times seven. 340, whatever, times seven.
Here, John.
107 times 280.
He's trying not to show off.
2381. I don't know.
What
kind of
show?
I messed up. I'll calculate.
So do you want seven? Okay. So here's, let's put it in this perspective. Yeah, do it in your calculator. So you guys can see the magnitude of what God is really saying here.
2401.
So 2,401. So let's say the seven times punishment is a belt spanking. Would you want seven lashes on your backside with the belt? Or 2,401 lashes on your backside with the belt? John is squinting his eyes. You picturing that, John?
Yeah, give me seven.
This is what he's saying.
Maybe zero.
Right? This is what he's saying. He's counted. There are some people that will take the 2,401 backside whoopings before they come to their senses. And then there are some people, just the sound of that, say, no way. John's like, zero. Did your siblings ever tease you because you didn't get in trouble?
All the time.
So, just to put that into perspective, 2,401 compared to 7. Okay, I got my 7. That's it. I don't want any more. 7 was enough. So, were you going to say something, John?
Yeah, so some of these things here sound very horrible, like eating their sons and their daughters.
Yes.
And that actually happened, and I think we're still in the 2,401 punishments because Israel as a nation still hasn't repented. And but in the year roughly 70, of course this is extra biblical, but Flavius Josephus writes about exactly this happening, that there was cannibalism taking place before Titus came in. And supposedly it was by accident that the temple was lit on fire. I don't know. Yeah.
Because it's not by accident. It was recorded in scripture that it was going to happen.
Yeah. But like the Romans. So Titus told them to put it out. And the guys, anyways, the fire just went out of control. And there was chaos. And there was, he recorded this cannibalism.
Oh, yeah.
Because they basically had besieged the city of Jerusalem. And nothing could go in and out. And so they were starving them to death. And I don't know if you guys know this about Josephus, but he was a Hebrew. And he converted to, he defected to the Romans. And that's why Flavius Josephus, that's a Roman name. But then he was also, one very interesting thing that happened right here when the cannibalism occurred. This kind of contradicts some stuff that we're taught about the New Testament. A lot of Christians will say that all the first century Christians spoke Greek, But Josephus records that they did not know the language. He had to translate for them. And then Josephus also writes that he learned the words and language of the Greeks. But the Israelites did. The people in Jerusalem, the first century Christians, did not know Greek. That's according to Josephus. But, like I said, that's contradictory to what most Christians will tell you.
Well, this depends what he means by that, because there are Greeks. There were Jews that spoke Greek.
Because
Stephen was a Greek.
Yeah, like Paul was a Roman citizen.
Like the whole issue with when the disciples said we need to put people over the widows, was because the Greek speaking Jews were like, hey, we have nobody taking care of our widows. So Paul's like, well, let's get some Greek-speaking brothers to take care of the Greek-speaking people. So if you look at the seven guys that were appointed to go take care of the widows, they're all Greek names. And the Hebrew dudes, like Kepha and Saul, or not Saul, he wasn't there yet, but Kepha and all of them, they went to go preach the word. And they left the Greeks there to take care of the widows. Right? So Priscilla and Aquila, all those are Greek-speaking people, right? So there were some Greeks. They had Greek synagogues and they had Hebrew synagogues.
Yeah, I had it on my computer. This whole passage out of Josephus's writings, where he had to translate, and this was to the city of Jerusalem. So
in Jerusalem, that might be.
Yeah, because it was this happened during the siege, where ultimately the temples burned down.
Okay. Oh, during the siege, yeah. I mean, so Rome might be trying to kick out.
The war lasted like from the year 66 to 72 or 73, and kind of in the middle is where they burned the temple down. And then some of these atrocities that are mentioned right here in this passage actually happened.
Well, to go into biblical stuff, I believe it's 2 Kings chapter 6 where this actually happens.
How could they burn a temple when it's made out of stone?
There was lots of wooden furniture in there.
Okay.
Was it here? Yeah. So it's 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 24. And it says, it was after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered his whole army, went up to besiege Samaria. There was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 pieces of silver. Why is a donkey's head being sold?
They're eating it.
They're eating it. Should they be eating a donkey?
Nope.
They're starving.
Okay. For 80 pieces of silver. Okay. And a fourth part of a kav of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Why are they selling bird poop?
For fuel, maybe.
To burn it for cooking?
So a donkey's head, is that good?
Nope.
Bird poop?
It's unclean.
Bird poop.
Depends on what kind of birds, right?
So as the king of Israel was passing by upon a wall, a woman cried to him, saying, "Help, my lord, O king." He said, "If Yahweh does not help you, how can I help you? Out of the barn floor or out of the wine press?" And the king said to her, "What ails you?" And she answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give me your son so we can eat him today. And we will eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and we ate him.
Oh, man.
And I said to her on the next day, 'Give your son so we could eat him.' But she's hid her son from us, so we cannot eat him. So help us."
So it happened multiple times. And I think there's yet some other passages where that happens yet too in the Old Testament.
Yeah, there is.
That's so sad.
And it's right here prophesied that came because of their disobedience.
And so all of this that we just read in chapters 26, this all has to do with the Sabbaths, with the seventh year.
Yeah, not keeping the Shemitah, the Shabbats.
Yep, this is about keeping the
Jubilee.
The land Sabbaths, right?
Yeah.
The land Sabbaths.
They finally rested, said
the Yovel, right? The 50 years, 50-year rest. He tells them, if you don't do this, I'm going to punish you. Your fields won't grow for you. starts off, I mean, that sounds pretty horrible, right? John's like, I planted 500 pecan trees, 500 olive trees, and then it's not growing. And then God's like, oh, you think that's bad, John? John's like, that's really bad. He goes, you keep messing up, that's going to be 7 times more than that, which was
343.
And then you cry about that one. He goes, you think that's bad? 7 times more, which is the 2,401. And that's when you start eating your children and stuff. And they get to that point all because they just not keep their Sabbath. That had nothing to do with, like, you know, fixing a relationship or loving your neighbor. Like, this is supposed to be easier. Like, loving your neighbors, that's a hard one, right? Loving your brother and your sister, that's tough because they got a personality. Some of them got personalities that are out there. Right, there's a personality out there where you're just like, I can't figure out how to make this work with this person. And so God's like, okay, let me give you something easy. Just let the land rest. And guess what the man can't do? He just can't let it. He's just like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? She's like, chill out. He's like, is it time yet? Can we go? She's like, it's been 10 minutes. You got a whole another 364 more days.
So my brother Peter has made a commitment to observe the Shabbat.
Right. How's
and, fun? Well, this morning he called me and he told me his landlord already cussed him out.
Yeah.
Christian landlord. And he uses some really foul language.
Oh, wow.
And, oh, wow.
So my brother is leasing some land from him and also jointly farming some land with him.
Okay.
And yeah, so he just used some really foul language. You better get your butt to work, you know. But the thing is, if he doesn't want him, he claims that he's supposed to. Yeah, basically he's being very hypocritical.
Yeah.
But, and he's got, my brother's in a big predicament because he has a farm loan, he has a peanut contract, and he doesn't have enough water.
Yeah, right. We've been praying for him.
Yeah, so if he gets the early and the latter rains, he could make a good crop.
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
But if he doesn't get the rains,
sure.
His water.
Thank you, Lord, already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so all of that we read is about keeping the land, the rest of the land, respecting Yahweh's land, because the land's not yours, it's His, right? And so all those things happened that you read later in your scripture and in history, all because they just didn't let the land rest. And because they didn't let the land rest, well, guess what happened? Famine happened, they were buying donkey's heads and bird poop, and asking the king to help them in their matter. And the king's like, okay, what can I do for you? You know, you got traffic violation. You're like, what do you got? Oh, well, she was supposed to bring her son so we can eat him. But she didn't bring him. Help me. He's like, imagine being the king of a country that you're supposed to be eating kosher. And a lady comes to you for a judicial matter. And you're like, what is it? Tell me, what did your neighbor do to you? Well, we ate my child, and now she doesn't let us eat her child. What? That's where they got.
Yeah, so eating the donkey's head or eating pig meat or whatever doesn't compare. Like, that's in a whole different universe.
So that's already gross.
That's another life.
But then they let 7 times more, and they started doing their children.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we're close to the 2,400 there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you have the Jeremiahs and the Isaiahs and the Ezekiels. They're the brothers saying, just throw in the white towel. You're not going to win this. That's where they're coming out screaming at everybody. That's where you get the prophets from. They're not coming with any special words other than, you didn't do this. That's why this has happened. Repent.
Right.
Come back to the Torah. That's basically all you the prophets are doing. They're you and me watching brothers, stubborn will, and they're just like, throw in the towel. You're not going to win this fight with him. Like, he's almighty. He's all powerful. It's dad. No one beats dad up. Doesn't happen.
Nope, you don't win with dad.
Right? So, anyway, chapter 27. You guys ready? We doing good with time?
My phone's over here charging.
Last time
I think we're doing pretty good.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we're doing plenty. We got plenty of time.
Okay.
So we don't get.
It's 2:30, so we're doing pretty good. We have an hour and a half. Here we go.
How long did it take you for that chapter?
That chapter? About an hour. It was about an hour. It's all right. I think.
No.
46 minutes. That was 46 minutes.
Okay.
What did you go to look for that time?
Because there's not a clock in here, so I had to go see the time.
This phone is charging. Right there.
I gotta keep it charged because I like to record them so they can see their. If case like right now, Sarah was probably recording Hava, so when they could see their sister play, since they're missing the game, they get to see her recording.
That's pretty neat technology.
So I will record them in case they all play at the same time tonight or tomorrow, whatever, so they can see each other. Because they asked, how do they do? So instead of me just having to repeat the same story to 7 different people, here, just watch it. Here's the video. You get to see it for yourself.
That's pretty neat.
All right. Y'all ready?
And we're going to see our own hits.
And then some people get to see their own hits, yes. Some people like to watch themselves.
Oh, there you go. Sweet.
All right. Chapter 27. So Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when a man makes a singular vow, the person will be for Yahweh by your estimation. If your estimation of as a male from 20 years old even to 60 years old, then your estimation will be 50 shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary. If it's a female, your estimation will be... Oh, I lost my spot. Sorry. If it's a female, your estimation will be 30 shekels. If it is from 5 years old even to 20 years old, your estimation will be of... the male 20 shekels, and for the female 10 shekels. And if it's from a month old even to 5 years old, your estimation will be for the male 5 shekels of the silver, and for the female your estimation will be 3 shekels of silver. And if it's from 60 years old and above, if it is male, your estimation will be 15 shekels, and for the female 10 shekels. But if he is poorer than your estimation, then he will present himself before the priest, and the priest will value him according to the ability of the one who vowed, will the priest value him. Okay? You guys understand what's going on here? You guys know what a vow is?
I promise things that they've promised, right?
Yeah, so there's a lady in your Bible. You might know her. Her name is Hannah. Right? And she was married to a man. You guys remember the man? What his name was? A man named Manoah. And Manoah had 2 wives. You guys remember this? One wife had like 5 children. And this Hannah had no children. But he loved Hannah. But Hannah was... upset that she had no children. Right? And?
She go to the temple, was praying hard, and they thought she was drunk.
Yeah, Eli thought she was drunk. I guess he's never seen real prayer before.
Not very much discernment.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
in the temple.
And he was the high priest.
Right, but what did Hannah say when she was there?
She vowed her child to him.
Oh, she did a vow, just like what we're talking about. Right? And what was her vow?
She had a baby.
What would she do with the baby? She had a baby.
Give it to them.
Did she vow that if it was a male child, then she would dedicate him
to serve
in the temple?
She said, give me a male child. He will be a Nazirite. Right? No razor coming upon his head and all that. And he will be, I will I give him to you. Right? And doesn't mean he's got... Did Samuel get sacrificed on the altar? It was her sac... No, right?
Yeah, human sacrifice is forbidden.
It's forbidden, right? So anytime someone vowed their children to the Lord, they had to go live in the temple. So guess where Samuel got to live when he was weaned? Mm-hmm. He was living in the temple with Eli in them, right? That's why Samuel's in there. Because Mama had to say goodbye. John, you got something?
Yeah, still thinking about his discernment. The little boy comes to him how many times? When the light bulb went off, it's probably God talking to him. Here I am, right?
Yeah. You're catching on, John, yeah. You guys ever met somebody with horrible discernment in your life? He put his head down. You?
Right here.
Did your wife let you know about it?
Yep. And others.
And others? Aw. Love you too, little guy. Yeah. That's what they're talking about here. This is what they're talking about. Vows, there'll be estimation for it.
What time is it?
It's barely 2:30, dude. You still have... Go take a nap. Go take an hour nap.
Every 10 minutes.
These dudes. If we would let them, they would go to bed with their baseballs and their gloves like teddy bears. But Sarah's like, those are dirty.
Would be the pillow.
Yeah. But they're dirty, so Mama don't let them. But I bet you if she let them, they would do it.
Hell yeah.
Yes, sir. All right. So, verse 9. So, if it's an animal of which men bring a gift to Yahweh, all that anyone gives of such to Yahweh will be holy. He will not alter it or change it, good for a bad, or bad for a good. If he would all change the animal for animal, then it and the exchange for it will be holy. He will not... I already did that one. Verse 11. If it is any impure animal of which they do not give a gift to Yahweh, he will present the beast before the priest. And the priest will estimate it, whatever it's good or bad, according to the estimation of the priest, so will it be. But if he will at all redeem it, then he will add a fifth of it to your estimation. Okay, so what does he mean by redeem it? Why would you have to redeem an animal? Anybody want to take a shot at that?
So, all the firstborn animals were God's, right?
Correct.
Talking about that? So then if you want to keep the animal...
They're talking about a vow. But yeah. So you're doing a vow in connection with the first, maybe... any type of a vow, yeah.
So then if the priest estimates it at 10 shekels, then you had to add a fifth. So then you could pay him 12, and then you could have your animal back. Am I on the wrong track here?
So the first paragraph that we read before this was about people, right? This one is about animals, right? And so what he's saying here is if you go to vow an animal, you're doing a vow with one of your animals, and you had just like a donkey, well, you can't sacrifice a donkey. You can't butcher a donkey at the altar and take it into God's house.
Right.
So to redeem it meant that the person wants to still give it, so they'll give them money, but the redemption money is basically because it can't be offered there. Right?
Right.
So they're going to probably either give them a little bit more money or they're going to substitute it for another animal.
Yeah, then they add a fifth, it says, right? 20%.
Yeah. So they add a fifth to it, or they'll go take that donkey and work it in the field or something. But for sure, what's not going to happen is a person's not going to be killed there at the altar, and an impure animal is not going to be killed there at the altar. Even in Revelation, in the letter... Way over here, post-Yeshua, death and resurrection. Way over here, it says that even in the kingdom to come, all the impure animals are still outside the temple. It ain't never gonna happen. Right? So far we have, whether it's people or animals, and a vow, they don't get killed. They get put to service. Right, the person gets put to service, And the animal, if it's pure, then the animal, you know, probably will be eaten. But if it's not a pure animal, it will be put out into the workforce. But you have to add what with it if it's impure?
1/5.
There you go. John loves math. I'm happy you like math, John.
Math is the easier part of this.
Okay. I think I am in verse 14. So, and when a man sanctifies his house to be holy to Yahweh, then the priest will estimate it, whether it's good or bad, as the priest will estimate it, so will it stand. And if he who sanctified it will redeem his house, then he will add a fifth of the money of your estimation to it, and it will be his. Uh-oh. Okay. So what are we talking about here?
Home.
Okay. And what about the home?
You can do the same, but there's going to be, as well, there's an increase if you want that, right?
So in growing up, we called this an Indian giver.
One interesting thing, your good and bad, mine says high and low.
Oh, really?
Because if the value is good,
oh,
it's high.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
I guess, but yeah, mine says high and low on every instance.
So yeah, so a man wants to set his, I want to dedicate my house to the Lord. Okay. Do you know what that means biblically? Not what modern people say.
So that's giving it to God. But since the house, you can't also take it over there and have to give it to him, then you have to redeem it.
No. So I want to give it to God. So that means, no, boys, shh. I want to give the house to Yahweh. So basically, it's now going to belong to the priest. So priests can go live in it or do whatever they want. Because it's Yahweh's, it's not yours. You can't say, oh, this is Yahweh's, but I control it. If it's Yahweh's, then Yahweh's priests are going to control it. But if you change your mind, you now have to go give them the money plus.
A fifth.
Because, yeah, I don't like people that do this. So like, I'll give it to you. Oh, hey. You guys ever had someone like that do that to you before? Oh, it's yours, John, don't worry. And then like a week later, hey, John, can I have my stuff back? Like, I thought it was mine. You said it was mine.
Well, it's like that example I gave earlier. When I was at Treasure Lighthouse, a guy did give his house, but then it didn't work out that the church could use it. So then they assigned me to sell the house, and then the church got the money.
Yeah,
but he didn't ask for the house back.
Yeah, well, in this estimation here, if a guy asked for the house back,
then he would have had to pay 20% extra to get back.
Correct, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy for someone to do that.
Yeah, but it's also crazy, you know, someone's like, here's a house for the Lord. For the priest get to have a nice new house. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know that somebody would be like, here's a house, just kidding, can I have it back? I don't know. But.
Yeah, I've seen that in Hobbs. This person passed away and he had it all given to the church. The church sold it and the proceeds went to the church.
Oh, nice. Nice. Hopefully the church bought someone else a house with it who needed it in their congregation. That would be my first thing, is if I got a house, I would look for somebody in the congregation who's in need and be like, hey, you know, I'm pretty sure the church had enough money already.
Yeah.
And why not just sign the deed over to somebody who would benefit from not having a house payment, you know?
And how many times do you think that would happen?
You know, I would be like, hey, we'll give you this house, sell your house, you know, and take that money, pay off your bills, or give that money to the church. But here's a free house, no payment. Like, let's help you out financially. I think that would be cool. That'd be cool to do with somebody one day.
I like what they do for the military, man. They've gone to war and they pay off all their...
Just, you know what that would do to a soul? If you just helped a person?
Oh my God.
Just someone in your congregation, right?
That's for Carmi. I have to take him to Carmi. She bought all that.
Yeah, so anyway, that's just cool to think about, like, what you can do to someone's soul just by helping them in such a way.
That's why I feel so neat when they show that where they do give the soldiers that have these injuries and the house is paid for and all. Oh man, that is so beautiful.
Yeah, easy. All right, so verse 16. So if a man sanctifies to Yahweh a part of a field of his possession, your estimation will be according to its seed. A homer of barley seed will be valued at 50 shekels of silver. If he sanctifies his field from the year of Jubilee, it will stand according to your estimation. But if he sanctifies his field after the Jubilee, or the Yovel, right, the horn, then the priest will reckon to him the money according to the years that remain, even to the year of Yovel. And it will be deducted from your estimation. And if he will sanctify the field, and if he who sanctified the field will in any way redeem it, he will add a fifth of the money of your estimation to it. It will be assured to him. And if he will not redeem the field, or if he has sold the field to another man, it will not be redeemed anymore. But the field, when it goes out in the Yovel, will be holy to Yahweh as a field devoted. The possession of it will be the priest's. All right, so what do we have here on this one?
A field.
You got a field. Okay, and what are we doing with the field?
Giving it to God.
Yeah, we're giving a vow. God, if you do this, I will give you the field. And God does, here's the field, right? Here's the person. Here's the animal. Here's the home. Here's the field. And on the field, is there anything different than the other ones? Or are they all, is it the same? Or what, anything you notice on it? John?
It becomes unredeemable. But what is the, I think I missed the requirement. If he consecrates the land after the Jubilee, the Kohen shall compute the price according to the years that are left until the Jubilee year, and its assessment shall be so reduced. And if he who consecrated the land wishes to redeem it, he must add one-fifth to the sum of which it was assessed, and it shall pass to him. But if he does not redeem the land is and is sold to another, it shall no longer be. So if the land is sold instead to someone else, then he can't redeem it even after the year of Jubilee, then
correct.
It goes to the priest.
It's the priest, yeah. So, yeah. So good gestures, just trying to, I mean, if I had a field and I needed money, I wouldn't go and try to give it to the Lord. I would try to go to my brother and try to financially help myself. I think these guys sometimes are people who wholeheartedly, like, here, this is for the Lord, and they keep it to the Lord. And I guess there are people that will be like, this is for the Lord, and then somehow have a change of mind and try to go and redeem it back. I don't fully understand that one. Maybe there are situations where you, that might be okay. I don't know, but I have a hard time finding a situation for me to say, this is Yahweh's. And then John comes a year later and he sees me back in that house. And he's like, I thought that was Yahweh's. Well, I don't know. I would just,
yeah.
That's hard for, that one's a hard for me, for hard for me to grasp.
Yeah.
But, all right. Any other comments on that before we go forward? No? And notice, this is all in perspective of the Yovel, of the 50, the year of release, right? God really is, like, honing on them about keeping the Sabbath years. Keeping the Sabbath day, keeping the Sabbath years, keeping them the 50-year HaYovel. Let the land rest. You rest, let the land rest. I pulled you out of Egypt so you didn't have to serve... Who? The king of Egypt, right? You didn't have to serve Pharaoh anymore. With all that hard slavery. Now you're serving me, and I'm telling you, take a break. The old king said, you are idle. Work. Work. You're slacker. You big slacker. The new king says, take a break. Rest. Rest for a day. Rest for a week. Hey, John, rest for a whole year. Oh, you know what? This is a double Shabbat year. rest for 2 years on the Yovel. But guess what? But guess what God has to wrestle with? A bunch of mini pharaohs who want to work, 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 work. And he's like, nope, Pharaoh wasn't your problem. You're your little pharaoh. Right? All right. So, verse 22.
Give me a second. That's John and Abby running around the hallway.
Or Nathan and Hudson.
Oh, is that them too?
Yeah, they're like this.
All right, verse 22. So if he who sanctifies to Yahweh a field which he has bought, which is not of the fields of his possession, the priest will reckon to him the value of your estimation to the year of Jubilee. And he will give your estimation in that day a holy thing to Yahweh. In the year of Jubilee, the field will return to him from whom it was bought. To him to whom the possession of the land did belong, and all your estimations will be according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 20 gerahs will be the shekel. So who's sanctifying? What to who? What's going on? So now you have a guy. Okay. So John's in financial hardship. So I am going to buy land from John. Now, if I buy land from John to help John out in Israel here, is that land mine? Because what do I have to do at least in the year of Yovel, in the year of release? I'm going to have to give it back to John. But right here it's telling us this is what happens if I help John out and I buy his land from him. And I take that land, I say, I really don't need any more land. So I'm going to dedicate this land to Yahweh. Can I dedicate that land to Yahweh that's not my land? What did we just read? What did it tell us there? It says, if he who sanctifies to Yahweh a field which he has bought, which is not the fields of his possession. Uh-oh. It's not mine in my tribe's name. It's really in John's. I'm just helping him out financially, right? So the priest will reckon to him the value of your estimation to the year of Jubilee. And he will give your estimation in that day a holy thing to Yahweh. In the year of Jubilee, the field will return to him from whom it was bought. So you get to catch that? So if I get by John's land, I have so much land, I can't do nothing else with it. I got too much land. I'm just doing that to help him. So I'm going to give it to the priest. Let the priest use it. The priests are going to use it until the Jubilee or the Har Yovel. And then when that year comes, they're going to go give it all. They're not going to give it back to me. They're going to give it back to the rightful owner of John. Does that make sense? So we have a field
consecration.
Yeah.
Or sold.
Field of. How would you do this, John? Because it's not my field. This is a
non-original owner.
A purchased field that had a vow, right? So we have that one that must be returned. Does that make sense to everybody? What we just went over there?
No.
Okay. All right. Verse 26. So only the firstling of the animals, which should be Yahweh's firstling, no man will sanctify it. Whether it's an ox or a sheep, It's Yahweh's. And if it's of an impure beast, he will redeem it according to your estimation and will add a fifth of it to it. If it's not redeemed, then it will be sold according to your estimation.
That's what I was talking about earlier.
Oh, that's what you're talking about?
So here, it's spelled out.
So, okay, so the firstlings of animals, okay?
Automatically belong to God.
Yeah, so you can't dedicate it to God because it's not yours.
Yep.
It's his.
Yep. You think people... if it's a donkey, then you have to redeem it.
Correct. So a firstling...
of a clean animal.
Of pure, or yeah, pure animal... is already Yahweh.
So it's a first fruit then, right?
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, so what that means is it's not yours to dedicate because it's his already. So if you're going to dedicate anything, you got to go to something over here.
Yeah.
You can't get the first one and said, I dedicate this to Yahweh. Yahweh, no, it, you can't dedicate what belongs to me. Yeah. I can't go and take John's truck and bring John the keys and say, John, I give you this truck. He's like, it already belongs to me.
Wait, wasn't that mine? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's exactly what Yahweh is saying here.
Yeah.
Is don't come with your firstling and be like, Lord, here it is, all to you. He's like, it's already mine. It's my truck. Yeah. What are you talking about? Right? So yeah, so the firstling of a pure animal is already Yahweh's. I guess Yahweh already knew that we were going to have some... different personalities.
Oh man, yeah. He knows us all.
Right?
He thought of all.
Okay. So, he thought of us all. Too bad he didn't bring the recipe how to cure some of them for us. Yeah. John, you got any tough personalities in your siblings?
Yep. More than a few.
More than a few. Y'all still working on them?
Yep.
40 years later? 50 years later? Or longer? You got one that's probably longer?
Yep.
No names, huh? Alright. So, where am I? Verse 28. Is that where I'm at?
Yep.
So, but no devoted thing that a man will devote to Yahweh of all that he has, of man, of animal, of the fields of his possession, will be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is holy to Yahweh. Nothing devoted, which will be devoted of men, will be redeemed. It will surely be put to death. You guys understand that one? So if I devote something to Yahweh... okay, so a devoted thing. So if I vow something, right? If I devote something to Yahweh, I cannot then go and say, John, you want to buy this. I cannot say, my house belongs to Yahweh and the priests are in there. And then I'd be like, you know what? Maybe John will give me some more money than the priest. That's what he's saying. Is if you ever devoted an animal, a field, a house, whatever you devoted, you can't come back and say, oh, you know what? They gave me a better offer, so we're gonna go with the more money. You can't sell it no more. Once you would say it's devoted, it's sanctified for Yahweh, that's it. You can't go and resell that thing. What you can do is you can redeem it, right? Then after you redeem it, but you can't try and sell it while you're devoting it to Yahweh. You're defeating the purpose, right? You guys ever meet somebody that do charitable things not for Yahweh's sake, but just to for their own reputation? You guys ever know someone that just like, yeah, we're just doing this for their reputation, but not really for Yahweh's, you know, pleasure? John, you got something?
Well, sort of related to that. People are very suspicious of the gifts given to church. Like exactly this house, a lot of the members... were against this guy giving the house to the church because they thought he was doing it for a tax write-off.
Oh.
So I literally had to tell them it makes no difference what he does. The church is gaining that house,
yeah,
and if we're going to sell it, the cash...
it's going to come into the treasury.
So anyways, to make a long story short, they were very suspicious that the giver was going to benefit.
Oh, boy.
But that's...
so if he did benefit, it would be... so
we're gaining.
Well, if he would not have given it to the church, let's just say the house sold for $250,000. If he sold the house himself, he's got $250,000 and paid capital gains because it was not his homestead. This guy had lots of houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not a homestead, he would pay capital gains tax on the $250,000, which would not be $250,000. Let's even say it was $50,000. He would still have $200,000 in his pocket. Now he gave it to the church, $250,000 worth. He gave it to the church, and let's say he gets a tax write-off for $50,000, the same that he would have paid in taxes. He still lost $200,000 or gave.
Yeah.
Like the church benefited, but the church benefited $250,000.
Yeah.
The church didn't have to pay any taxes. Anyways, I tried to explain it to these guys, and they were still suspicious. But yeah. But if you, God knows your heart, right? It really doesn't matter. The guy gave the church the house, and he got a tax deduction for it. But he was not ahead giving the house away. You're never ahead.
Yeah.
You cannot. Give. So if you were to give a lot of money and file your taxes and you got receipts for all of it, it's all five of whatever, you know, it qualifies as a charitable donation. You're going to get a smaller benefit than what you gave, a lot smaller.
Oh yeah.
So the same way, but here it's flipped. If you want it back, then you pay 20%. You can redeem your tithe, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much anything, except the firstlings and the humans.
Because they're not yours. Yeah.
And the land, you can't redeem it after it was sold. Right? You can't redeem. Your own land won't be redeemed if you, whatever that exclusion was there, it then goes to the priests.
So if you devoted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you devoted it. But good, guys. John's catching it. Okay.
See if I can remember it.
So verse 30, home stretch right here. So all the tithe of the land, of the seed of the land, of the fruit of the tree, is Yahweh's. It's holy to Yahweh. You're not giving it to him. It's already his.
Yeah.
No matter what you plant or whatever gives birth on your property, that is his. Don't say you're giving it him the first. It's his. It just grew on your property. It's his, right? So 31. If a man will eat if a man will at all redeem anything of his tithes, he will add to it the fifth of it. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock or whatever passes under the rod, the tenth will be holy to Yahweh. He will not seek whether it is good or bad, or high or low in John's, neither will he change it. If he changes it at all, then both it and the change of it will be holy. It will not be redeemed. These are the commandments which Yahweh commanded Moses for the children of Israel on Mount Sinai. So what he's saying on the firstlings of things, you don't swap them out because they're not yours to begin with. Your vows and your offerings, those you bring your best. The firstlings are already his. Don't mess with it. Don't try to swap it. They're already his. They're not yours to do that. That's what he's saying. Whether it's high or low, just that's already his. But your gifts, your offerings, those are the ones that you do because those are the ones that are supposed to be coming from your heart. But these other ones are not even yours. They're his already. Does that make sense? Yeah? Any questions, comments, anything you want to add to this one?
So, the tenth is automatically God's. You're not giving if you're giving the first tenth.
Correct, yeah. So the tithe that you give in church is not yours. You're not giving that. It's
the stuff you're giving voluntarily is what's above and beyond.
Correct. So the tithe is not yours. It's his. It's his stuff growing on your on his land that you're stewarding for him, right? Everything else after that is then out of your yours. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and another thing I keep talking about, my past church experience, but this tithing is something that, maybe I shouldn't mention names, but Pastor Dave preaches on that pretty regular. I haven't heard it recently, but over the years, that's a regular thing. And obviously, I was a treasurer. I could see it. People were giving. There, all of them that had a history going to Pastor Dave's church, they gave a tenth. I mean, I saw it there.
Yeah.
Because they'd write a check. But the interesting thing about that is that's one Torah or mitzvot that they decide makes sense for them.
It's still alive, John.
Yeah.
The rest of it is done away with, except for that one.
Well, the rest of it's ceremonial, or it's for the nation of Israel, it's for the Jews. Yeah.
It's not for us.
And you're like, what? Like, well, then biblically, they came and they brought grapes and olives and barley
that.
And wheat.
Cha-ching.
I had a pastor one time, like, someone was questioning him in church, and he's like, I don't want your apples. And the guy was like, well, that's what the tithe was. It was the fruits and the veggies and the animals.
These are the first apples off of my apple tree.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I missed it, but on fruit trees, was it the first 3 years you don't pick the fruit?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
So then the first fruits that you pick...
is it for the Lord's?
But those you just let them fall off of there, right?
No, you would... or you would go give them to the priest.
Oh, first 3 years?
Oh, the first 3 years?
Yeah.
I don't know what they would do. They just couldn't eat them.
I don't think you would have fruit the first 3 years.
Because I know what
they
do.
Because the first year, your tree wouldn't grow. Second year, if it did, you couldn't eat it because it would be too immature. But like the third year, it'll start getting bigger. And then the fourth year, it would be edible, but that's the one you'd give to the priest. And then the fifth year, you start eating it yourself, and then on. And then every 3 years would be a tithe of that.
I know in Canada, they would, on the apple trees and plum trees and cherry, you know, we pick different fruits there. Lots of fruit trees. But they would, very early on, they would thin out the crop, the fruit, because... Yeah, and of course those had it. We couldn't do that because that was highly trained people know exactly which one. So basically, they would take half or sometimes more, and then so that the tree, because these would be small apple trees. They're not big, but the amount of fruit off of a small apple tree is just astonishing.
Because they prune it.
Yeah.
It gives them that strength.
Boy. Yeah, I remember picking apples when there was ice on apples. It's late in the year. Like in the morning, there would be frozen dew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but so we're probably not this year, but if my mom's health is up to it, Lena and I are going to go to Ontario with my parents.
Oh, nice. I hope everything goes out good.
Yeah, but mom is finding it a little hard to adjust that she can't really work. She's right away winded and...
No, she needs to slow down.
And I don't think it's going to, like, her... Oh, I think Medicare or whatever is going to pay for it, but her first hospital stay, what do you think that cost?
$2,000? Oh, no, they did heart, all kinds of...
Yeah, she was in ICU for 3 days.
Oh, that's expensive.
How many days?
3 days in ICU.
$50,000?
$102,000. Yeah, she had a full blown heart attack.
Gosh. Excuse me. That's crazy.
Yeah. The cost of medical stuff is just obscene.
I know. America is the most expensive healthcare in the world.
Oh, brother, you gotta be kidding me.
We're the most expensive, and we rank, when it comes to actually healing people, we rank dead. I'm almost dead last. So nice, we pay the most with the least results.
Sounds kind of like our school system too.
And the pharmaceutical wants it that way. Keep buying that pill. Keep buying it up.